Welcome to Everyday Drinkers, episode number 27. We ask that you respect the laws, drink responsibly, and everything that goes along with that. I'm your host, Derek Somer, and today I have with me Doug.
Doug.
Yes, we have. Nobody else seems to be able to make it, and this is an episode. If Dave somehow jumps online, then so be it. We'll bring Dave in if I see him pop on. But realistically, I've got no expectations. It is, what do they call this, Memorial Day?
Memorial Day weekend. And people, that's a holiday.
Yeah, it's a holiday. So people do things on Memorial Day weekend. And I don't know. I'm not doing anything. However, I would like to be. That's why I'm here to drink. The trick being, it's been like, I don't know how many freaking weeks now we've been trying to do this. And so I just figure that we really just got to get it done.
Yep.
At all costs. And the cost today is less people. So, I guess that's what we got to go with. Okay, so what we did, though, is I think we're going to be bringing the thunder for the amount of alcohols that we can possibly, maybe not consume, but, I mean, I've got a lot of brands, you've got some brands, so I think we've got a lot here.
Yep.
So, what did you bring to the table in forms of gin today?
I brought three. My personal standby when it comes to gin, Bombay Sapphire.
And that is good? You like that
good
stuff?
I do. I am also rocking the Tanqueray and the Seagram's Extra Dry Gin. I wanted to go a little bit low end to to see what all the subtle differences are between the gins. And honestly, I'm not expecting much difference.
Really? Like you think the low end and the high end are going to taste the same?
I'm going to find out. I poured a little bit into three different shot glasses. I just did a smell through all of them, and surprisingly, I think the Seagram's has the smoothest, non-pungent smell.
See, that could be bad, because gin is an aromatic, it's got a lot of different flavors that are supposed to be coming through on the gin.
Good call.
It depends, of course, on your palate, but like when I see red wines, for instance, like so there's certain people like, look, I don't even smell my wine, I don't care. Then there's other people like, look, it doesn't have any scent to it. And other people like, if it doesn't have a scent to it, then it's already missing probably a third of what it's worth, you know, like the experience, because there's a lot more senses than just taste. And
I'll give you that.
I'm having an epiphany or something. Or maybe no, I'm having a change of heart, that would be the right word, towards gin, because I am traditionally an anti-gin drinker. Never really liked it. I always equated gin with drinking Pine's Hall. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, and maybe
Tanqueray.
I got that here too. Yeah, so I'll get back into this in a minute. So what I brought is, let's see, I got a lot here. So I've got the Givine Gin de France. This was actually one of our sponsors on Common Man Cocktails back in like a month ago or two.
Sweet.
So they packed me with the Floraison. I think they're Floraison. I'm not really sure. Basically, it's a floral. It's very much just got a good bouquet to it. Like, it's very floral. It's not juniper embedded. It's got a lot of other flavors to it. It's also high-end and expensive. So, I think, I don't know. I can tell you. Actually, you know what? I could tell you exactly how much it is, because I'm going to pimp my site. I have a website. I don't know if I told you about this website. Have you ever been to mixeddrinkypedia.com?
Mm-mm.
So I'm doing...
I've never heard of it until I read it in the notes.
Yes. See, so what I did is I started collecting everything I can find about different brands, different recipes. I started it originally thinking, oh, I could just put my recipes in here. It'll be easy for people to print, because I'm trying to document them in a Word doc so I can publish it as a PDF. But things are just getting overwhelming. I'm trying to write them all down. So what I did is I said, look, I'm building a wiki. People can add their own. You know, we can go all crazy. So once I started that, I started getting into like putting brands in there so I can cross-reference the brands I'm using. And so it just turned into basically, I'm going to document everything about cocktails, from the mix, the mixes, the accessories, the glassware, the brands, everything I can get. And since I have connections with some of the brands now, I can call them or send them emails and have them, you know, validate that the data is correct. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the major brands I have in there, including Givine, I've had the company look down and go, yep, that looks right. So it's actually up to date. It's not like Wikipedia where you're getting whatever. It's like a sun in here. So what I brought now, to just go back to where I was going, I had the Givine Floraison. They also had sent me, let's see if I can find it in here. It's not in my list of notes. I have Givine Nourizon, I think, or something like that. Basically, it's a London Dry. So I've got my floral one, I've got my London Dry. I also have Brave Spirit Standing Guard Gin, which is available mainly in Pennsylvania. They're a smaller, I guess you can call them a startup company. So They're growing, and they're getting a lot more financial backing and stuff.
Where were they from?
Pennsylvania.
In New Amsterdam, Brave Spirits Standing Guard Gin from Pennsylvania?
Brave Spirits Standing Guard Gin. Yes. It's an American gin. Made. All their deal is $2 that you buy. Whenever you buy their liquor, it's about $20 a piece for whatever that they have, gin, vodka, rum, and whiskey. They're all $20. $2 of that $20 goes to the men and women of the armed forces, firefighters, police department. So basically, and then they have these different like funds that they set up, and they just keep donating money into it. So that's their kind of their spin on things, is they're doing 100% U.S. made stuff, which is why they don't have tequila, because you can't make that here in the U.S. So the gin is made here, the rum's made here, everything. And now, you know, certain people are like, well, I don't want that made here because it tastes better elsewhere. So it's really, if you want to support the U.S. made stuff and you want, you know, it's a good gin. So I've got that. I've got the Sangare. Let's see. This one's this is a huge bottle here. Let's see. It's the 94 proof. It's got to be bigger than a handle. 100% neutral grain spirits. 1.75 liters.
Nice.
Pretty big. It's never really been used because I don't really like it that much. What else I got here? I also have New Amsterdam gin. Don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Oh, no. Okay. So that's what I read in the notes.
Yes. This is another one, the New Amsterdam gin. Because I didn't put a comma. The New Amsterdam is a different style of gin, or it's a normal gin. It's just a different brand of gin that I hadn't heard of, but came on a bottle of Echo Domani. I don't know. They must have, like, is either a parent company, or maybe they're just cross-promoting them or something. But we had done a sponsored episode with Echo Domani on Common Man Cocktails with some guests from HelloVino.com. And they brought all this wine from Echo Domani, and then one of them had this little thing tagged on it, and it was a bottle of New Amsterdam gin. So I've got that here. Why not? So I've got that. Let's see. Do I have anything else here? No, I think that's about it for my gins. I don't have the Sapphire, Bombay Sapphire. I did document it, but I don't have it myself. And I didn't know Seagram's made an extra dry. That's kind of scary.
Apparently they do.
Now, you have a specific set of recipes that you plan to bring out and show off?
Yeah, we'll see about showing off. The one that I'm the most excited about is the Brighton Tea. And the reason that I was really excited about it is because when I was thinking about the particular drinks that I want to do for the podcast, one of the things that really struck me was the fact that with gin, it's distilled spirits, but it's not a neutral spirit, so it's going to bring something to the drink. And I was thinking, you know, you can do the gin and juice, you can do the gin and tonic, which I'm going to do both of those, but I was thinking something, you know, like more savory, you know, like a drink that's sweet or, you know, not really relying on anything other than the gin itself, like the gin and tonic, but, you know, something like more like a recipe or something. And I came across the Brighton Tea, which is 2 ounces of Bombay, a stick of cinnamon, a sprig of rosemary, and a half a teaspoon of honey. You shake that, and then you float. You float 3 ounces of milk on it.
How are you going to do that?
I'm about to find out.
That's cool. I mean, when you float 3 ounces, you're going to just be drinking milk, aren't you?
We're going to see.
I'm going to go. I'm going
to
guess
I don't even
that.
Know if it's possible to float it. But
that's
true. Literally, I'm about to find out. I'm about to try floating it.
And the other thing is, you can, when you take a sip.
Oh, hell no. There's no floating.
They don't float very good?
Milk drop to bottom.
Why would they say float?
I don't know.
That's weird.
Maybe the recipe got it backwards. I couldn't imagine the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, milk mixing. Is pretty. The closest thing I've seen that floats would be like a Bailey's Irish cream.
Yeah.
In that form of dairy product. Usually they just fall right in and turn everything white.
Yep.
But you know what?
Oh, shit. All right.
What'd you do besides make
a
mess?
I'm just going to start pouring it all in.
Yeah. Dude, you're going to get probably a better effect, in my opinion, that way.
It's I'll tell you, the color is kind of interesting how it's coming out.
Why is it white?
It's a little off white.
So like semen?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't. Hold on, I'm gonna take a sip.
All right.
Yeah, it kind of tastes like tea.
Oh, well, that's kind of good. So you think it's got the tea? Well, it's got rose. I don't know. What is rosemary? What? Give me a clue. I'm lost on the rose. I understand cinnamon. I'm trying to think of what rosemary, what type of flavors it would have.
Well, you know, rosemary tastes like rosemary.
Well, yeah. Can't use
it's,
the answer.
It's actually a fairly potent herb. You can't use too much of it in a recipe without it starting to take shit over. But in this, you can smell it, and I think it gives it like a more of the herbal thing that you would experience with tea,
which
like
is,
a
yeah.
like an herbal tea.
And then you get the cinnamon, which also kind of goes into that direction. And
yep.
The honey, even there, there's honey and tea. I do that during the wintertime, so
yep.
That makes sense. The milk thing is, I guess, no milk. There's milk. Some, you know, English tea, you'd use milk or cream.
Personally, I take cream and sugar in my tea. So.
Oh, no, you don't. You take tea in your cream and sugar. Come on.
No.
I use
a good, appropriate amount of cream and sugar in my tea, unlike how I take my coffee.
Oh, so the coffee thing is completely different.
Completely different.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I didn't catch that part. I figured you were just going to go with the dude. I've got like, I just, you know, I've seen how you do your coffee, and it's just like 10 ounces of cream and then some coffee in there.
It's the only way to do it, man.
But coffee is more bitter. So if you want to round out the bitterness, sometimes you just got to keep adding in the sweetness. I could appreciate that. I go the other way because I just don't like that much cream in the morning, really. It's kind of a calorie thing for me. But I don't mind a bitter. I would rather buy a better coffee to get rid of, like, a good coffee is not so bitter. But I mean, if you're just drinking, you know, the bottom of the barrel, you're gonna get what you're gonna get, like a Dunkin'. Like Dunkin', to me, Dunkin's weak now. But
nice.
I remember when, you know, Starbucks is like the total bitter nastiness. But I think I haven't had too many drinks that have had the tea-like component besides obviously like a hot toddy. Or, maybe the pot of gold, which has basil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of play where you're getting more herbalistic, which is cool because there's not a lot of cocktails that have herbs. And I think, not like it would be something I would drink 50 of them at once, but it's a good change-up,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of neat. See,
this is pretty good.
I kind of went traditional. What I wanted to start out with, because I think that the recipe brings out the gin, would be a Tom Collins. So what I like about the Tom Collins is it's like drinking Sprite in a way, but with gin. You know, there's no Sprite in there, but it's, you got your club soda, you got a little simple syrup. You know, I did a teaspoon of simple syrup, 4 ounces of club soda, an ounce of fresh lemon juice, 2 ounces of gin. So more soda than there is gin, but every style of gin changes the taste of a Tom Collins. Like, for instance, I've had the Tanqueray Tom Collins, which I'm not doing right now, and it tastes more piney, more juniper, where the Tom Collins with the G-Vine, which I have right now,
mm-hmm.
tastes much like a weaker Sprite, and weak in the way where it doesn't have the sugar, like the sticky sugar effect of the Sprite. So it's just very light and very kind of springy with some cool floral notes and a little lemon. So, you know, it has a good flavor profile to it.
Nice.
And then the other one I had, all these I've done on the video show, so I kind of went back that direction. The one I haven't done yet tonight would be the grass skirt, and this is a 1.5 ounces of gin, an ounce of Cointreau, ounce of pineapple juice, and then just a half a teaspoon of grenadine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's different. I mean, it's got more of an orange attack than it would have a lemon in that case. A little pineapple, so it'll be a little more Hawaiian tasting. And the Blue Train cocktail, which is another one, has 1.5 ounces of gin, ounce of blue curacao, which is like a bitter orange, and then 1/2 ounce of fresh lemon juice. All of which, you know, I think that the ones you named off were your typical gin recipes.
Yep.
And although, that's what people are probably going to order. Maybe a Tom Collins. But with gin, it seems to me that people have attached themselves to three core recipes, and no one ever deviates from that.
Ooh.
That's unfortunate. So the other thing I did is I have a shot glass so I can test the scents and tastes of some of these other gins.
Yep.
And I have something to pour them in if I didn't want to drink them.
That's smart. I should have brought something like that.
So that was my goal. So off the top, let's just talk a little about the gin, where you had said it was a flavored spirit, not, you know, it's not a neutral spirit, which would be what? Vodka.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the core alcohols, you've got what? Vodka, gin, rum, tequila. That's a pretty good number. I think there's five, though. I don't know what the hell else I'm missing. But out of all those, the only one that's really got no flavor is rum. I mean, the only one that is vodka.
Really? Yeah. What kind of rum is that?
Yeah, the neutral-based rum, you know, it has nothing in it. What gin has, though, is it is a neutral grain spirit, usually. It starts its life like a vodka. But gin is created by redistilling white grain spirits, bringing you to that neutral grain and very tasteless, with sugar cane, which has been flavored with juniper berries. So you're getting your little pine sol, piney-esque flavors. And the most typical style of gin would be, of course, the London Dry Gin. Beefeater is one of the most well-known London Dry Gins, first produced in 1820. And I think I did the Beefeater in Mixed Drinkipedia, it might be the only London Dry Gin still housed in London.
Hmm.
Have you been to London?
Oh, no. Oh.
What was that?
That was the Tanqueray Gin and Tonic. My God.
You don't like that? I thought you were a fan of Tanqueray.
No.
Were you ever?
No.
No, huh? Tanqueray is supposed to be a good brand, no?
No, yeah. Like, people swear by Tanqueray. Personally, no, shit's too piney. Yeah.
It's a London Dry. Let me smell this up. Yo, dude, you're right. Oh. It's got like a, I don't know, it really goes right into your nose, like all the way down your throat with just a scent. You know, it doesn't just stop at your nasal passage. It runs right down. Wow, it makes you want to cry a little bit.
Yeah.
So how many, I mean, what other gins have you tried besides, or are these like you just have always stuck with Sapphire, Bombay?
Yeah, once I found Sapphire, I mean that, then I, you know, I've had Beefeaters, Hendrix.
Okay, yep.
The normal Bombay.
And you're not, so what is the normal one? Just, it's just not, it doesn't have as many flavors.
Yeah.
Aromas. If I remember correctly, the Sapphire is the one where they take the, like certain gins, you boil the aromas, the all the different adjuncts that you're putting in here, the botanicals. So you, yep. You're usually, you put the botanicals into the neutral grain spirit before the neutral grain spirit, whatever it starts its life as. You soak it in there for so many hours, like I think maybe 24 hours or whatnot, or maybe more. And then when you heat and you distill it, the vapors already are carrying that flavor in it so that it drops down. I think probably that's how Tanqueray is. And the problem with that is it becomes so instilled in that beverage. So if you, it's like a beer, right? If you put something very strong in there for a while, your beer is going to come out with that just poking right through.
Yep.
And I believe the Bombay Sapphire, they have some technique where they're infusing, I think what they do is they put a net around in the distill pot, and they put all their botanicals in a kind of a mesh. And then as they boil it and it heats up, the vapors pass through the mesh. And then they, you know, they come out the other side and they reform back into the liquid, the alcohol. But they've now been infused from the vapor portion. They haven't been infused by boiling it or keeping it into liquids for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting more subtleness to it because it's not right in your face.
Cool.
And I think that kind of brings a little more, it doesn't bring that reaction where you almost wanted to throw up in your own mouth. I don't know who else's mouth you're going to throw up in, but just saying.
Well, things that can't be unseen.
Yeah. So how did you find do you remember how you found Sapphire? Were you just at a bar and somebody's like, here, try this instead?
No, not really. I can't say that I really did very much gin drinking, but the wife is a gin and tonic drinker, and she turned me on to the Bombay.
Oh, well, that's
Sapphire.
Yeah, that's the other way. Just get a woman involved.
Since then, if I have either purchased or have consumed a drink with gin in it, it's by and large been Bombay Sapphire.
So that's it.
Ditto with martinis. That's how I drink my martinis.
Yeah, I was totally thought you were going to bring a dirty martini to the table tonight.
Well, we've already done that.
That's true. But still, they're like, when did we do that? We didn't do martinis, did we?
Yeah, we did martinis.
We did? Yeah, for some reason I remember we did that. I guess, yeah. All right. I did vodka once. That's probably why.
Okay.
That would be why. Yeah, I remember that conversation. After I smelled the Tanqueray, I put the G-Vine, the non-floral one, the London Dry, and it doesn't smell that. It doesn't smell like Tanqueray. It doesn't have that pine salt. It smells almost more like this is the best way I can envision it. Let's say it was Christmas and you had a Christmas tree. You take the Christmas tree down, right? And it's gone. It's out of your house. But you know there's that lingering Christmas tree scent that's very subtle, but you know that there was a Christmas tree there? It's kind of that kind of play where you know there's juniper in here. It's gin and you can smell this juniper, but it's kind of faded in the background and it's got I want to say almost like a cologne. Oh, what is that smell? It smells really good. I think I might just put this on my neck. No, I don't know what that is, but it's really tasty smelling. Like maybe a vanilla? Might be like a vanilla thing going on. I've never had this before. And let me try it again. Yeah, there's a little piney aftertaste. Very kind of. It's very cold. Like. It's, you know how the peppermint, you get that coldness?
Mm-hmm.
But there's no peppermint in there. I don't know what that is. It's just magic. It's magic gin. I don't understand how that works. But it's very tasty. Like, tasty where you could throw this on ice and drink it, which is not the way I usually do gin. Impressive. So, I only have, like, one of those little sample size ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bummer, because this is 50 milliliter. I could really use it. I'm going to have to see if I can find, a big bottle. That's really tasty. But there's so many different varieties of how you do this. And I guess that's kind of how you get turned on to any specific brand.
Yeah. But
Bombay has a nice bottle, too. That bottles always help. The Tanqueray bottle's kind of lame. I mean, it stands out, right? I mean, everybody knows you can see a Tanqueray bottle from 700 yards and know it's a Tanqueray bottle. It doesn't necessarily mean the contents in it are good.
No, that's very true.
But it's good for marketing.
Big green bottle.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a Beck's beer on overdrive. Like, it's just huge. I'm sorry, I'm just not impressed with the Tanqueray. I don't even want to. I feel that it destroys the drink. Obviously you were kind of, you took it up pretty bad right over there. What was that? That was just a Tanqueray and tonic?
Tanqueray and tonic.
See, there's not enough ingredients there to really hide the Tanqueray taste.
Yeah, I mean, I could try putting another lime in there, but.
Six limes, eight limes.
Yeah.
Truck of them. Could have just.
Yeah.
Lime Valley and squeeze it in there.
Yeah, maybe if I squirt some lime up my nose and then take a sip.
That would work.
It'll distract me.
A little punch in the face. You know, just something to change it up a little bit. Oh, what else do we hear? Okay, so the first confirmed date for the production of gin is the 17th century in Holland. Although it claims that they have been produced in Italy before that, others believe it originated in Holland in 1550. So that's a while ago. I don't understand how, you know, you go from the 17th century, 1550. There's a lot of dates, but I guess I don't know. They said that the Dutch were the first to start flavoring the neutral grain spirits with the juniper, and that they're using it more for medical purposes. So maybe that's the deal. Maybe Tanqueray is really a medicine. You ever think of that?
Hold on.
Are you feeling any better?
No.
No?
Yeah, it is medicine.
Yeah,
because nothing that tastes that fucking bad should be anything other than.
This is true. Hold on a second. I want to try this New Amsterdam stuff. I'm afraid because if you buy a bottle of wine, this was what was it? Pinot Grigio.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes with a bottle of gin. Like, to me, that's kind of almost doing damage because they're so unrelated that you're like, are they just trying to get rid of this for free? You know. I don't know. I mean, if I was the gin maker and you were to say, hey, look, I'll put this on my bottles, I'd be totally all about that. But I would have thought it would be neat to have, maybe you get them, you go to a liquor store and you buy something, get one free, something like that. But that might be harder to set up. Because like the minute you throw it on wine, an unrelated product, I don't know, smells a little more like It's like a half dose of Tanqueray.
Which one's that?
This is the New Amsterdam.
Okay.
It's like if you took Tanqueray, like one part Tanqueray to five parts Sprite. It's got a very lemon feeling to it. Lots of lemon. Lemon, a little orange peel, and the juniper. Whoa. Huh. Tastes like candy. I don't know if
that's good. You're drinking it straight at this point.
Yeah. Why not?
Go for it.
Only because I have to make my next drink, and I'm still drinking my Tom Collins. I don't want to get wrecked before the end. I think it would go good in a Tom Collins, specifically because of that little extra sweetness with the lemon.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would play out well. But I wish I had the Bombay to really kind of match it up against. This other thing that we mentioned the botanicals, but we never said what they were. So usually you're going to have juniper. That's what the Dutch used. Bitter orange. So maybe that's what the New Amsterdam has. Lemon.
Sorry.
Along with others, usually anise, angelica root, I mean, orris root, licorice root, cinnamon, coriander, and cassia bark. So you got the cinnamon thing, so that kind of complements where you're...
Cassia bark.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
From Indochina.
Oh.
I don't know. The little picture on the Bombay looks like it's a turd with steam Oh, no, that's a branch with some leaves.
Close.
No, it was the lighting.
They blame it on lighting. So, yeah, I remember they did enumerate a bunch of the lists. You know that Bombay Gin, Bombay Sapphire, doesn't come from, you know, Bombay?
The hard way?
It doesn't come from India.
No, it's London, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's London.
Isn't that funny? Like, they've put such great marketing into it. People have built this mythological history that says that, you know, it's originally from India and you know, somehow it's just like the Indian recipe or something like that. It's got nothing to do with it. It was all marketing. They just played it out that way, so it sounded like more exotic. Yeah. It works.
Yeah. I thought it was just, you know, because of the historical, the imperial nature between, or the relationship between England and India.
You would think that because the logo represents that, yes. The logo represents the colonies that the UK formed or whatnot, but it has nothing really to do with that. They just kind of said, "Hey, let's build this like just envisionment of where this could have come from," but there's really nothing to it, unfortunately. Mm. But I think it would be cool. So what else you got here? Have you cracked open the Seagram's Extra Dry yet?
I did.
How's that going for you?
It's good.
Really?
Kind of pisses me off. It has, you know, like I said, it doesn't, you know, it's not like the Tanqueray. It doesn't jump up your nose and drop kick your olfactory senses. It just, it's on par with maybe like Absolute Citroen, right?
Yes.
It's got that citrusy thing going on, and it has a nice orange, lemon, slightly sweet, citrusy thing going on. It's good.
So
I'm going to try making a martini with it.
What is now the cost is where I'm wondering. Now the Tanqueray is what, like $17 for a 750? That's what my Googling is telling me.
17, 18.
Yeah, you know, it's hard with alcohol because it depends where you're from. The Seagram's looks to be like 14 or so. Is that right? Is that what you think it was?
14 or 15.
But that, I mean, it's equivalent. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I when you said... I was thinking it was like really like the bottom of the barrel, but that's not that bad. I mean...
No, just incremental, you know.
Right. But I mean, to get a flavor that's more interesting out of it, because the problem with the juniper and the Tanqueray is you don't find anything else. You can't find all these different aromas. I mean, if they're going to put different botanicals in there that you'll never be able to taste, what's the point?
Yeah, just don't.
And for $2 less, you're saying that you can find other... I, by the way, have some Patron. What is that? Citron? How do you say that?
Absolute Citron.
Oh, I have the Patron Citronage or something like that. The orange liqueur.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure it's the same concept, just with tequila instead of vodka.
Right.
You know what, podcast listeners? Do yourself a favor. if you drink gin and you haven't tried the Seagram's, give it a whirl. I'm pleasantly surprised.
That's good, because I like to find new stuff. Because I'll go back to what I was saying before. I was very much against gin. And really, I think I'm going to say I'll give you two reasons. And this is probably the case with a lot of people, maybe even people listening, because I know people just don't like gin. My experiences with gin have always been Tanqueray or something without a name, like White Mountain Gin, which is made in New Hampshire. You know what? It don't taste good. It tastes awful, right? And they both have that very juniper-esque to them where they're like, wham, right in your face. And you're like, this is not fun for me. You can't hide it. It doesn't matter what you make it in. It's still going to be like whatever it is plus juniper. And I want something better. And then so I gave up on that. And I had the opportunity to try the G-Vine, which I had, you were here when you remember that little bottle you had? That you stole. Remember, you put it in your pocket when we went over to my dad's house.
Yep. Oh yeah.
So I have two big 750s of those now, and it's awesome. Like, it's totally different. It's like the Sapphire in a way where you're like, oh, this is what gin can be like. And if you're like me and you're in this mode where you've had this stuff and you're like, this is vile, all you really need to do is just try alternatives, like you just did. You know, go out and get the Seagram's. Give it a try. If they have the smaller ones, that's even better, because then you can actually try it before you know, you don't want to buy a 750 and go, oh, this is awful.
Yeah, I'll say that at least for the folks up in New Hampshire, it's not that great down here, but in New Hampshire, at the New Hampshire liquor stores, if you can't find a nip size of something, you're not looking hard enough.
Right.
Because they have freaking everything.
They had, and I didn't buy it, but they did have the Bombay Sapphire and a different gin that I didn't pick up. And that was just because I had already spent $90 on, like, Galliano. And I did this week, we did an orange liqueur episode, and I needed to buy a couple other orange liqueurs that I didn't have on me. So, yep. I after all that, I ended up spending, like, $100 on alcohol. So I left the nips out because just adding more didn't make sense when I already had all these.
No, that makes sense.
I'm going to have to try the Seagram's and see. They might have a nip for that, too. And, you know, just to see. But that is the beauty of actually having a show that goes through gin. Because now people don't have to go, well, I don't know. Look, if Doug says it's good, it's fucking good. You just go out and get it. You should pause the show or listen to it on your way to go buy some Seagram's gin.
I highly suggest drinking on your way back listening to this.
So you, and that's what,
wait,
I don't
wait,
know.
Wait, wait, wait. But at the same time, drink responsibly.
Right. Just make sure that you're not the one driving. You just be in the
car.
Don't
go loaded.
Right.
Take your time and sip it on your way back.
Great.
By the way, I'm just going to sit. Just bear with me for a second. Slight rant.
The
thing that really pisses me off about open container laws is the fact that if somebody's going to go get fucking loaded and they're going to go drive drunk, they're going to do it.
Right. It doesn't really,
because you can't have something open in your car does not mean that you're going to have less drunk drivers. What it means is somebody's going to pound the shit before they get in their car and go to wherever they're going to go. Don't force me to pound my beer.
Yeah, I never understood, like, you know what? It's what they did is it's sort of like what they decided was, look, there's too many people, like probably a too big of a number of people that aren't responsible enough, and will take advantage of that to the highest extent, and they ruin everything for everybody else. Like, if I was to go in, if there was no open container law, sure, I might bring a beer when I'm heading over to, like, my mother-in-law's house down the road, right? No, whatever.
Yeah.
And realistically, it's not even that. I don't care necessarily about drinking the beer while I'm driving. It's because I don't really drink that much when I'm driving anyway, like, of non-liquor. But I want to be able to throw the stuff that's already open, because, you know, once you have the open container law, apparently you can't even put stuff in your trunk.
Right.
Well, that's a problem, because I run an alcohol show, right? So let's say I want to go show some people some, and I've done this because fuck the law, right? Where I just want to be like, look, I want to show off the Standing Guard gin or the G-Vine gin. I'm going to a party, and I want to, I want to give some people a perspective on some good gins. How am I going to do that? How do I get there? Well, I got to put the gin in a bag in my trunk. Now, somehow that's still bad because I can reach back there somehow and grab it. I don't know. But I just want to go over somebody's house, and I'm not going to, like, I can't bring a new bottle every time. That's retarded. Right. So yeah. How is that is the part of the law that I don't like. Maybe, and or you bring a new fresh bottle to somebody's house and then you bring it home with you after. Well, now you can't because you're not supposed to drive that way. Bogus. I mean, I don't know if there's a way around it. Like if there's some sort of vault you can buy that maybe has like a breathalyzer test and you blow into it and if you pass and it opens, I don't really know. Which I guess would be dumb because then you would obviously be opening it sober and then you would get drunk.
Well, that's that with the thing, you know, they have the whole breathalyzers that you that they hook up to your ignition. You have to blow.
Yeah, that's if you're really bad. I don't have one of those, but I mean,
yeah, that's if you get to that point where you have one, I mean,
you're in the situation where drinking and driving would be bad for you.
Yeah, it's like, you know, judgment issues.
Dude, we have another law. In this one I experienced because we had to go to a funeral for my wife's grandfather last weekend, which is, of course, sad. But, you know, like...
I was going to say, I'm sorry to hear that.
We did the wake, and then after the wake, we went to, like an American-Italian-style restaurant and did the, you know, just kind of celebrated his life, and... They brought, we had, I don't know, 18 people, I think, on a big table. One waitress. One freaking waitress. One slow waitress. So what happened is people were ordering drinks, and we were ordering two at a time because we would be done the first one and probably second before she was done taking the orders all the way down the table. So when you ordered one, sometimes you can get some other lady would come and bring it out or whatnot. But at one point, it got up to one of the guys, and he had two beers. Well, he had one. He ordered another when she was going off down the table somewhere, and the beer showed up, but he still had some at his, like, in front of him. They won't give it to you. That you cannot have two beers at a single time at the table. Is that weird?
Yeah, I knew that up there, which is always, like, down here, I'm surprised that they'll let me have two drinks on the table in front of me. It's great. I love it.
I never knew that rule existed.
Yeah.
So, of course, this goes back to what you're saying. What happens? Well, the first thing he did is he gave it to my wife because she didn't have a beer. She had water. So he put it, he's like, oh, you can have it. Or no, he gave it to his daughter the first time. So he gave it to his daughter because she's
awesome.
Well, she's 22. So it was cool. And or she had already finished a martini. So he gave it to her. Then they put the other one down in front of him. And then he would just drink hers until hers was gone, and then he would finish his. Right? It just had to be in her spot because they don't. As long as it's all cool, when the cops show up, they're fine. And then the next time it happened to his daughter. So what she did is she just got out of college, so she's kind of a pro. She just looked at him, and the lady's like, "I can't give that to you because you still have a beer." She had like a half a. It was like a Blue Moon, right, in a big freaking Blue Moon glass. Mm-hmm. So she just chugs it. Boom. Gone. Puts it down. She's like, it's gone now. Lady puts it down and walks off.
Nice.
Hey, it's all legal now.
It's ridiculous.
It's like, if I put it next to my other glass, I'm still sober. But the minute I consume it, now I'm actually digesting it and getting more drunk as I have the second. And now I have less control over, you know, when I should stop because it's constantly in my system. So I thought that was kind of funny.
I would agree, sir. You know, one of the things that I noticed going through the different recipes that I was looking at for gin, the vast majority of them paired with a sweet liqueur.
Yes. Like a Cointreau?
Yep. And I'm wondering exactly – it's got to be
– this has pineapple juice.
Obviously balance, but
– well, yeah. Like I'm a – I'm a big fan of balance in my drinks.
Yeah.
Do you like sour or do you like sweet?
I would have to say, see, I don't really do too many cocktails. I mean, I drink beer, and then if I'm not drinking beer, I'm drinking like a martini. Or if I'm not drinking a martini, I'm drinking something straight. Okay. I like to taste
just like
my liquor.
Taste. Yeah. Okay. I can appreciate that.
I truly do. There's something about just over mixing that I apparently have some kind of deep rooted issue with.
Well, I know somebody who always does straight.
Ooh, that's good. the Seagram's cranberry juice and lime. Excellent.
So just cranberry juice, lime, and you're done. What about, have you ever had Palm Wonderful, pomegranate juice?
Yes. Actually, that would probably be really good.
I know. That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah, and that stuff's a little sour. It's not too sweet, right?
It's dry.
It's dry?
Yeah, it's got a dry taste to it. Like, I guess sour would be the best. There is sour to it, I know that. But it to me, it's very, it's just got a dry factor to it, where when you finish, like when you drink it, there's not a lot of sugar, it's not over-sugarified or anything, and it just leaves your mouth like a vermouth almost.
Oh, interesting.
And I know, like 100% pomegranate. If you, the minute you go into pomegranate juice, like a cocktail juice, you know, like a cranberry fruit cocktail, is going to be sugar, and cranberry juice, not so much sugar. And this is the same thing, because I'm working on a recipe right now that has, I'm doing cruisin' cherry rum, black cherry rum, pomegranate juice, a little pineapple juice, a little simple syrups, a little lime, so kind of like a sweet sour mix, and a little banana liqueur. I'm just trying to get past the dry. I'm trying to get it to be more sweetie cocktail, but not over the top sweet. And that would be the issue with the pomegranate, is it can be super dry, and or whatever it is, it's sour, and it's got these other properties to it. But it's, you know, without going to the sugarfied version. So I'm trying to figure out how to balance that out. But in a gin, like with a sweeter gin, I could totally see how that would, you know, play in. Maybe a little pineapple and some sugar, or maybe a Cointreau or something that's like got a lot of sweet factor to it. A schnapps. Yeah. That is hard with a schnapps, though, because you want a schnapps that's not good. I mean, with gin, gin and schnapps, in my opinion, don't play so well together. Like, you have to get a very, like, you couldn't use like a butterscotch or something. You'd have to go maybe like a, maybe a triple sec, or can't think, maybe like a banana. I don't know. Tuaca? What about Tuaca? That'd be good.
I have no idea what that is.
It's like a brandy, orange, vanilla kind of thing.
Orange, good. Brandy, vanilla?
Yeah.
Orange, brandy, vanilla.
So picture Cointreau with a little like a VSOP, Cointreau, and a little vanilla vodka.
All right.
But I don't know, again, I don't know if that would go with gin. So what I did in this one is this grass skirt. I used the Brave Spirits Standing Guard gin and Cointreau. Mainly, I really wanted to use the New Amsterdam, but I can't convert milliliters into ounces good enough to know if I have enough to cover 1.5 ounces. So I didn't do it.
I think you're looking for around 40 milliliters, 35.
For an ounce?
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe I could have pulled it off.
29 milliliters.
Is it an ounce and a half?
Is an ounce.
What's an ounce and a half?
1.5. Hold on. Dude, it's going to come out to about 40, which is what I said.
You're a fucking 40, genius.
44.
Oh, I could have done it, dude. But then I wouldn't be able to review it. I'm thinking of maybe putting this out on the blog, because it's pretty good. So I might save that up. I also have the both of these. It's like the nips are... Man, I wish I had bigger ones. Oh, well. So let me try this grass skirt here. I also have my... You ever see the video episode I have with the glass Dharma? It's a glass straw.
I had not.
Oh, it's pretty cool. This is supposed to be in a cocktail glass, but I got lazy. I put it in my Collins glass because the cocktail glass was just out of reach. And actually, it's in reach now. I just like the. It's like a big honking glass straw that fits in the Collins glass, and it still comes up about 3 inches out of the Collins glass. The problem is, I'm used to. For some reason, I want to when I use a straw, I lift it off the bottom of the glass. And because the glass straw is heavier, this has happened at least, I'm going to count 5 times thus far, is I start to drink, I lift the straw up, but then it slips out of my mouth because it's heavy. And then I spray like liquid everywhere.
That's awesome.
5 times tonight I've done that, and I have yet to learn. It's just like a habit for some reason.
Okay, the grass skirt, this appears to be like the typical fruity mixed drink. I mean, replace your 1.5 ounces of gin with any liquor. Vodka. rum, no. Tequila. I think it works.
It totally will work, but it's not going to be the same thing. It will not taste the same.
No. I'm not saying this is going to taste the same, but I'm just saying this is just like classic, you know, if you're making a mixed drink, put in some Cointreau, some pineapple juice, some grenadine for some color, and put in whatever liquor you want.
Yep. Guaranteed. And they probably all have their name. Like with the Cointreau, or I would replace that with Grand Marnier, and boom, you got yourself a margarita, right? If you use tequila. Yep. With rum, I don't know what the name of the drink was, but I'm sure if you Google like rum, Cointreau, pineapple juice, something's going to come up. The grass skirt, I don't think many people have heard of, because I've had a couple bartenders say, hey, that's cool, I'm gonna use it at the bar. And I don't understand the name, personally, because to me, I would have thought it would have, well, the grass, I can understand if you're using Tanqueray, right? You're going to get a little, like a little green flavoring to it. I use the Brave Spirits, which, let me just smell this here. Smells like kind of smells like the New Amsterdam. Not as sweet. So it less Sprite, more Tanqueray, but not, again, it doesn't attack your senses. But you're getting that, the juniper flavors. Honestly, I think it's a little dulled down. If you're big into gin, the Brave Spirits might not really grab you. Like, it might not stand out enough to say, this is a huge gin. But if you like gin, but you're not a big fan, because, you know, sometimes it can turn you off and you're always afraid of the different brands, the Brave Spirits kind of falls right in the middle for not a huge gin drinker, but not completely despise it, right in the middle. So it's a good, you know, I think the way they made this fits the common man, if you will, where most people will be able to tolerate it and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And then this drink, it doesn't stand out that much. And this is probably because it's the middle of the road common man gin. The Tanqueray, I think, would be over the top. The G-Vine would probably even add more to it. The G-Vine or the G-Vine dry, London dry or London gin, or the New Amsterdam, I think, would probably complement it the best, because it's got the orange and it's got the pineapple, both of which give you those properties, like those cool, sweet properties to them. I think bringing the sweets along with some sweet gin is going to give you something cool. The Standing Guard doesn't come out too piney and it doesn't come out too sweet, so it kind of almost gets masked by the pineapple and Cointreau.
Mm-hmm.
So, but overall, it's a little sour. I don't really know why, but it just tastes sour to me. Maybe that's the gin aftertaste. It doesn't taste anything like what I would have imagined a grass skirt to taste like. I don't know what I exactly think that should be. It's kind of Hawaiian, so I was going to say
it should taste like, you know, beaches.
Yeah, which I think if you added if you added a little coconut rum or creme de coco.
I was going to say if you add something coconut in it, got it.
Just a little. Yeah, this is like one of those drinks where, like, and I've been getting into these recipes a lot, like just trying some different dynamics. And I found like just a half ounce or even a little more, a little less in certain drinks, you don't get the taste right away, right? If you hand somebody the drink and you're like, tell me what's in it, they won't pick that ingredient out. But the minute you say, you know, coconut, they'll be like, yeah, I can taste it. You know, it's there. They just don't taste it. And I'm starting to really enjoy that, because I like my cocktail like I like my red wines, my white wines. I want to explore the drink. I don't want to be like, oh, yeah, cherry. Oh, what else is in there? It's cherry juice, cherry vodka, cherry rum. Well, fuck. Just give me some cherry juice. You know, why am we going, give me some cherry juice and some crane alcohol and I'm there. You know, I want to go a little outside of that and say, look, I want three specific transitions in a drink. I want it to be sweet up front, leave a cool aftertaste with something in the middle, just like a wine. But that's kind of where I've been going with them. This one it's got the sweet and the sour going on. I don't know if it really has a lot of stuff in between, but this is a mood drink. If you're at a luau, a grass skirt would be like the thing. It would, you know, I mean, well, okay, that sounds weird, because obviously you'd be wearing a grass skirt, but the drink, the cocktail, I think would go really well. And it's gin, so you're getting a little of everything. But I guess, so for you, a gin and juice, I've never had a gin and juice myself, because I don't know, it just sounds kind of boring. Is the juice always cranberry?
No, I think it's classically orange.
Oh, really? So just like a, can it be anything though?
I don't see why not. I mean, I was just walking through the store and I was like, "Huh, cranberry juice. That'll work."
Have you ever tried grapefruit juice?
Oh, hell no. 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 As a matter of fact, I got this drink one time And I knew for hell, I don't even know why I got it. Actually, I do, because it had a cool name and I never had one before. It was called a Salty Dog. And it was vodka and grapefruit juice with a salted rim. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll try that. You know, maybe it'll be good. And I hate grapefruit juice. Hate
really?
It. Yeah. And, you know, I took like one sip of it and I was like, oh, this is the worst fucking idea ever.
That's, you know, that's a, like a grow some hair in your chest type of drink where it's almost like a joke. It's like a cement mixer, right? There's no joy in drinking something that tastes like somebody just threw up in your mouth. There's no joy in that. It's just that it's like one of those party things. You say, hey, try this. This is going to be awesome. Let's all do cement mixers. Yeah! And you're like, oh, this is a bad idea. Oh, let's do it. You know, it's just stupid. But now, the reason I said the cranberry juice is because I just did this week's tapings. I did it's called the Double Crosser. It has Double Cross Vodka, which is a brand that somebody has sent me the samples of.
Uh-huh.
And it has it's like a half ounce of grapefruit juice. I bought this whole friggin' thing of grapefruit juice for a half ounce. A half ounce of grapefruit juice, an ounce of grape juice, and like some vodka and something else, right? You get a little grapefruit aftertaste, but not like grapefruit aftertaste. Not like the I want to scrape my tongue off with a piece of sandpaper type of thing. It's just a little bit, and it's one of those subtle things that you have to probably either sit down and really look at, happen to know the ingredients, or somebody tells you. Like, that subtle.
Yeah,
but
cool.
I that was the first time I've done grape, and I have other recipes that need grapefruit juice, so I got to go find those now. But that's an iffy juice, man. That can get out of control real fast on your face.
I hate that when things get out of control on my face.
I know. So what does the name gin come from? That was something else I had looked up. Do you know what it comes from?
She broke my heart.
No.
Oh.
It's based off the French word, and I don't speak French, so it's like Genevieve or something like that, or gin. It sounds like gin, right? So it translates, unfortunately, to the word juniper, right? So gin actually is, if you did the translation, it would really be juniper. So that would be your core ingredient. So Tanqueray has it right. But it was originally sold in pharmacies and used to treat medical problems like gout, kidneys, and stomach ailments. So, you know, if you've got gout, you've got a lot of other problems. Gin is not going to be one of the ones you're going to be like, this tastes disgusting.
It'll help you walk better.
Right. And it's always good to be able... And kidneys, come on. You got to have those.
Oh, kidneys are so overrated.
I know. And then, so the British troops fighting in the Low Countries during the 30 Years' War called it Dutch courage, as it warmed their body during cold, damp battles and long campaigns. Then the British would eventually arrive back home, and of course, as troops do, they bring the stuff back with them to England. So, I mean, we've had the same thing happen. We bring back stuff that we've acquired from other countries or something we had on the road. And in
sake.
This case, sake, good example.
Shish kebabs.
See, dude, you know more about this shit than I do. I would have never thought of shish kebabs. That would have not been my first.
I'm being slightly snarky. I'm sure that came over with immigrants.
Probably. Like most other things in the U.S. So, gin became a hit in England early on, mainly because the government allowed gin to be produced without a license, all while imposing huge taxes and duties on imported spirits. So if you think about it this way, if the government says, look, if you want to buy this imported alcohol, it's going to cost you, let's say, £40. And then... Or you can produce or buy this gin that happens to be right here sold in the store for £5. Okay, £5, £40. Well, obviously, you don't care what it tastes like at that point because it's such a big difference. So you're going to go with the cheap stuff. You're going to go with what's homegrown. And all of a sudden, a market for gin products popped up, mainly because the grain that they use is not really great quality. So all the grains that they have, when they have leftover grains that they can't do anything else with, they can distill it down and they can use it with gin. It's even better. And apparently, these poor gins and these poor grains, they're not really good because they use good grain for beers. Mm-hmm. You don't want a shitty beer because that's just not cool. So when you take the grains, you make them with beers. You take the shitty grains, now you can distill them quickly and cheaply into gin. And before you know it, thousands of gin shops spread around New England. New England, that's what we are. Spread around England. And by 1740, it was six times bigger than beer. and it was low cost, making it a huge popular thing for low-income families. So now you've got your middle to high incomes drinking beers and probably gin in between, but then you've got this thing for all the lower income families to afford. Not that alcohol is always a really good thing for low income families to buy, but you know, times are tough. And you could have gout. You never know. And then when King Williams III, better known as William of Orange, came over to the English throne in 1689, he made a series of statutes actively encouraging this distillation of English spirits. And what?
Statutes.
Statutes. Oh, yeah. And
I'm just saying, I reread that like five times to figure out what the hell was going on. And then it was like,
what's wrong with statutes, dude? I would love. Can you imagine a beer statue?
To see a series of statues actively encouraging the distillation of English spirits. I want to see those statues.
Okay, so let me try that.
Dude
again.
Over like a mash tun, you know, stoking the fires or some shit.
I might have went overboard there. Okay, he made a series of statutes actively encouraging the distillation of English spirits. Anyone could now distill by simply posting a notice in public and waiting 10 days. Sometimes gin was distributed to workers as part of their wages, and soon the volume of daily sales exceeded that of beer and ale, which was, of course, more expensive. And then in 1730, in London, they had over 7,000 shops that sold only spirits. Abuse of alcohol by the poor became a major problem, which was tackled by introducing the Gin Act at midnight on the 29th of September, 1739, making gin prohibitively expensive.
Huh.
This is like the cycle of life. It's like, here, have your gin, it's free. Holy shit, you guys are getting wasted. Let's raise the price and make that not a concern.
Right.
And more than likely, making it prohibitively expensive included taxing, which brings it back to the state, because that's what we do here. I mean, whenever it's like, oh, cigarettes can kill you. There's a lot of people smoking cigarettes. So if we raise the price, it's addictive, which is even better than gin, because gin doesn't have any addictive qualities unless you're an alcoholic. So, bam, now you get everybody buying $7 packets of cigarettes, which I don't know if $7 might be this might be a little high, but $5.50, I think.
I think it depends on where you are.
I think it's $5.50 here.
Cigarettes are pretty cheap down here still.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Dude, North Carolina. Goodness grows in North Carolina, which includes a lot of tobacco.
Ah. I wonder but still, you think they tax it just because? I guess if they tax it, nobody would buy it, and that would hurt the economy.
Well, you know, you try to be, you know, and don't bite the hand that feeds. So if you have revenue coming in for tobacco sales because you're producing tobacco, and so you have tobacco companies in North Carolina like R.J. Reynolds. No. R.J. Reynolds is in Virginia. We got
Philip Morris.
I want to say we have Philip. No.
How many other ones are there?
No, I want to say we have Reynolds.
I'll believe it.
Yeah, and I fucking live here. How sad. Anyway.
Regardless,
you know, like the last thing the state wants to do is, you know, piss off one of its largest companies.
That's true. I wonder how many people inside of like an R.J. Reynolds actually smoke. Because you know what's funny? you don't know the statistic, do you?
I do not necessarily know this statistic, but I do know
family discount.
Coworker has that account, and like when he has to go out there, apparently there's somebody that they have to work with that apparently just chain smokes in their meetings.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In the meeting room?
Yeah.
They can smoke in their meeting room?
Well, you know, it is a cigarette company.
Still, dude, that's wrong. Like, we have, in our building, we have a insurance company, and their smokers are not allowed to smoke in the front of the building because they're an insurance company.
Where do they have to go?
I don't really know where the magic point is, because I'm not a smoker, but I will tell you this: when I go to take trash out, like if I take a bunch of servers out of the new boxes, and I bring the boxes down to the compressing machine downstairs near the trash, at the loading docks, there's usually five people, at least in the wintertime. Now it's different because it's warm out, but they huddle in the loading docks. They pull up the dock door and they smoke out there, right? Like hanging off the dock. The problem is, the wind blows into the dock, so I'm in there like dumping the trash out, and I'm just getting high on tobacco fumes because they're all blowing into the building, completely ruining the purpose of smoking outside.
Nice.
Because it's just blowing it in anyway. But, you know, I'm not a smoker, so it just bothers me.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. I do like cocktails.
Well, doesn't everybody?
I like me a cocktail. So what I guess I didn't really cover the G-Vine very much because I had some stuff in here about G-Vine. It was produced in the Cognac region of France, so it's obviously going to be expensive. I don't know why that matters, but it is. It's four times distilled. The gin's created with the Ugni Blanc grapes. The Ugni Blanc grapes produce a smooth and neutral spirit compared to the grain typically used in making gin. So with the G-Vine, you're getting a little something different. It's $40, something different. It's infused with the vine flower, giving it that aromatic nose, like the flowery nose. So you're getting, it's kind of a neat idea. You're it's basically a wine, but you're turning the wine into a gin instead, which is, it's a neat concept. Overall, the Chivai gin, 80 proof, you know, it's not bad.
Well, I was going to say, is that not too different than the concept of
grappa?
Yeah.
Really? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Because it does. It sounds like basically instead of, you know, with the grappa, you're using the everything else. It's
right.
The trick behind grappa, and I don't know why I did research in here. Oh, because they were a sponsor too, is that you're getting, you're basically, it's usually done by wine companies or somebody that's buying the rest of the grapes. But you're taking the grapes, you're pressing them, you're making your whites and your red wines. But in the end, you're still gonna have some seeds, you're gonna have some stalks and some skins left over.
Yep.
Throw those into a bucket and you make yourself some grappa out of it. You're distilling that down. So it's almost like a green aware. You're basically using everything you can from Mother Nature to make all the different distilled beverages. And this, I guess, this is almost the reverse, though, because you're using the flowers. So you're basically picking the flowers. And if I don't know how that really works, because if you pick the flowers of, like, I have three pear trees. If you were to take the flower off, like the petals, then you would still end up with a pear. If you cut it off, like cut the flower, you're not going to get a pear, because that's part of the pear. So I wonder if they use just the petals to put it, because that's all you really need, right? To kind of put the petals in there after, like right before they die, because they're obviously, the petals are pulling in some energy, photosynthesis and all that jazz, to be able to make the fruit. But right before they're done, I wonder if they just take them off and they use that to kind of give it that whatever that's the scent is. It's very smooth and relaxing. It's a great flavoring.
I wonder what kind of a martini that would make.
Good one. And well, it depends on what you, I mean, if you are a diehard gin martini and you want it with olive juice and gin and you want, you know, your sapphire, that's what you want.
Oh, then yeah, then because from how you described it, it doesn't sound like it could take the olive juice. It wouldn't be able to find its way out. It wouldn't be a good compliment.
I don't know. I've never tried it, cuz I've never had a like or want a dirty martini, or maybe I could try it and just see. Can't hurt. But, I mean, there's nothing, no risk in trying.
Do you like olives?
I'm not a huge fan.
I don't think you did. No. Green olives, not black olives.
I can't. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of black olives. I can eat them by accident, but I wouldn't, you know, like if they're in a salad.
Anybody can eat them by accident.
Well, they're tiny, right? You put them in a salad, you're like, oh, there it goes. Oh, well. But they don't have a lot of flavor to me.
Yeah.
But I don't sit there and eat a whole mouthful.
They're kind of waxy, or I guess it depends. Yeah. Usually they're canned and they're a little waxy.
See, for me, it's like those fruits that are like, oh, you should try this. Well, I don't want it. No, seriously, it doesn't taste bad. Well, what does it taste like? Well, it doesn't taste like anything. Then why the fuck would I eat it? If it doesn't taste like anything, why am I eating it? What is the benefit to me eating something that I can't taste? I might as well eat air, right? I don't want that. So if it's one of those, and no, forget it. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, you don't eat mushroom. I don't want a mushroom. It doesn't taste like anything. But why am I going to eat it? I don't know. But there's no mushrooms, though, in the G-Vine, so I'm cool with that. It's got some different flavors, though. It's got a ginger root. It's got licorice. It's got green cardamom, which I don't know what that is. It's got cassia bark like the other ones. Coriander.
Cardamom is an herb.
Is it? Is it good?
I think it's a seed.
Why do you know this shit?
I don't know.
Okay. It's got juniper berries, of course. You know what a kubi berry is? Gotcha.
Could be cool.
Could be.
Could be cool.
But this one has lime, nutmeg and lime, so you're getting a little different. And I urge you to go to mixeddrinkypedia.com and just read the G-Vine history if you're interested in it. It is $40, so, I mean, that is above and beyond expensive for gin. But to me, I don't drink a lot of gin. If I don't know what people drink for alcohol. I don't drink that much alcohol. I understand I have a lot of it, and I do a show, but I don't really drink a lot of alcohol. $40 to me, if I was to buy, I would rather honestly buy a $40 bottle of something good in the gin realm that I can keep around and be able to really love than to buy even a $15 bottle of something I don't like.
I was right. I wikied it. Cardamom. It's a small seed pod.
And they, sweet. What does it taste like? You don't know. You cardamom. Just know all this random friggin' information. I don't know where you learn this stuff.
Cardamom, I don't know.
That's cool. I mean, that's cool. You don't need to know it. I'm just saying. I don't know how you pick that shit up, but you're all about the spices and stuff.
No, but things that get lodged in my head.
That's cool.
Useless at best.
But overall, like, I think the G-Vine is, for $40, when you're looking at a Tanqueray bottle for $18, that's a big difference. So people who are cost conscious are obviously going to, like, no, I don't want G-Vine. Now, if you're drinking a gin occasionally and you can put up the investment, just do it, just because you're going to get something good. Otherwise, honestly, what it sounds like to me is you're going to want to pick up some of that Seagram's.
Yeah, I was going to say, in my opinion, best bang for the buck is going to be the Seagram's. Especially if you're going to use it in a mixed drink.
What's the Sapphire cost, do you know?
25, I think. 25, 26.
Okay, so now we're... See, this is a tricky slope. Yeah, it's about $20 to $25, I think. $20 to $27, let's say that. That probably cover most of the areas. If you're looking at a difference of $14 to $27, that's to me, for alcohol, that's a significant difference.
Oh yeah, definitely.
15, 18? No, I wouldn't. You know, wouldn't be a big deal. But I mean, I don't know. Like it for, I buy. I'm an outlier, right? Because I buy alcohol every week. I've got so much alcohol, and otherwise I get it for free. So, you know, because people are sending me samples, and samples for most people are 750 milliliter. So there's a lot of. I'm basically just saying, look, this is what I think is good, regardless of the price. This is the stuff that I like. Then there's the realistic me that's like, look. $50 for rum is a little insane. $50 for a lot of things is insane. The only thing I know that would cost you $50 would be like a large bottle of Bailey's, Cointreau, or Grand Marnier, or Absinthe, right? Other than that, $50 for a bottle of liquor is a lot of money. When you're at $40, it's still a lot of money. Now you're looking at the only spirit that I know of that can range in that price consistently is tequila.
Yeah, right? Tequila prices, in my opinion, have just gotten all fucking out of whack.
Because there's like 7,000 different brands. And from what I understand from doing different research on tequila, we only have a very small amount of the brands that are available in the U.S. compared to like Mexico. There's so many brands that don't make it here. Have you had, you probably haven't because I don't think you could find it. Did you know that Justin Timberlake just put out a tequila?
I would chalk that up into the category of things I don't give a fuck about.
Dude.
But no, I I was not aware of that. But good on him.
It's called 901. It's a specific tequila. What they're doing nowadays, for anybody who's listening that gives a
shit. Is that an area code?
Yes, it is. It's okay. Wherever Justin Timberlake's born or lives or whatever, his hometown. It's also the time when partying starts. I'm serious. I'm not making this shit up. I can't make this shit up. Right? This
no, is real. I just think that it's great that Again, I was being slightly sarcastic.
No, but it's real.
And it was true.
That's where you're like, what? You're serious, right? No, I'm dead serious. So what I did is I was on Twitter and I was just like, oh, 901 Tequila, Justin Timberlake's wedding. You know, oh, come on, give me a break. That was my first answer was, look, somebody who's got a lot of money, pop singer, come on. They're putting out a tequila. Give me a break. And it's
again, if the market is out there and it's good stuff, it's good quality, and they're not, you know, trying to.
That's the risk, though, right? When you
do,
it's
do
like
whatever.
Cabo Wabo, which you liked. I remember when we were here, I gave you Cabo Wabo, and that you went over that over the Cabolino for, I think it was a silver, which might be justified.
I mean, anything over in the silver is, you know, it's silver.
Right. Ugh. Maybe I had the Reposado. I can't remember. The end result is Sammy Hagar did good, right? Because he was doing it for his company. He was doing it for the cantina. However, this stuff, it's pretty good, dude. Oh, God. What? Saturday Night Live. Oh, God.
You're going to have to check that out. It is just Justin Timberlake, but it's fucking hilarious.
I shall check that out.
Crap. Apparently, you have to sign up or something for
Hulu?
That. Hold on. No, I'll send you the clean one.
All right.
It's just as funny.
The 901 tequila, I was kind of smacking down. It's pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, and this is another one of those deals. What he did is he went around and he went to all the different tequila vendors or whatever they are, farms, and he found one he liked. And he's like, this is the one I'm going to back financially. Then he disappeared from it because apparently he's got a lot. I don't know anything about Justin Timberlake, but apparently he's got a lot of fans and they're all under 21 or a large group of them. So he really doesn't want to be associated with the tequila brand, but he wants to market his own tequila, which I respect. You know, if you're serious about it and you really want to do it, and that means you have to be hands off, kick ass, because you know that you put in a lot of work to do it. But it was pretty good stuff, and I don't know. There's certain things where I'm willing to spend the money to get something better if it's exponentially better. But there's stuff that's exponentially better in the reverse direction. From what I'm understanding from you, the Seagram's is probably in that realm of, look, this is good stuff and it's cheap.
Yeah. Again, pleasantly surprised.
And yeah, because you started out going, look, I'm not expecting anything big. I'm sorry. And for me to be like, oh, look, this $40 gin is awesome. Well, shit. If you're spending $40 for something that's not awesome, then you're doing something, you know, somebody's doing something wrong and they're going to fail at it.
Right.
To make something it's less than the price of the standard competitors. Sapphire is a good middle of the road, though. Like, it's at the price point where you could say, look, this is a lot of money, but I'm a gin drinker. I'm going to do this. Where it's not like, this is a lot of money, but this is just a lot of money. I can either pay my rent or I could buy some gin. And when it comes to that, you should really be paying your rent or you need to be in one of those homes.
Pay your rent, kids. Pay your rent.
That is the one thing here. Drive sober, pay your rent, enjoy cocktails when you're not doing those other two.
Exactly.
I think we did. I think we covered everything, dude.
Yep.
I'm pretty impressed. Do you have anything to add?
I think the only thing that I'm going to add is, personally, gin belongs in a martini.
Okay.
Gin, in my opinion, does not belong in a mixed drink.
Really?
That's why they make rum.
So you're a big rum mixed drink fan.
If I'm going to have a mixed drink, it's probably going to have rum in it.
Yeah, you know, I'll have to agree to some point. Like, I've had, there's not a single mixed drink I've had that has gin that I was not impressed with. Well, maybe the Boston cocktail, because I'm just not into, like, this more soury. I don't know. There's something about it I didn't take kindly to. But I like all cocktails. The only place I know gin fits in 100% of the time, Long Island iced tea.
Yeah.
But you got to have it because it's got everything. You know, maybe, yeah, I'll have to agree. Like, rum makes such a good cocktail. And the thing is with rum, you can make a cocktail that actually has three different rums in it, four different rums in it. And it's fine. You don't get four different gins. Gin is very well enjoyed as the core ingredient with very little other ingredients to taint it.
Right.
If you're huge, if you want to really enjoy a gin, and you drink it in a some sort of gin martini, you know, either a standard martini, dry martini, sweet martini, dirty martini, whatever it is, to get the gin. In that case, I highly suggest you go with either what you had said, like the Seagram's gin, like the Seagram's extra dry gin, the G-Vine gin. If you're going to do straight gin in a martini, spend the money. Just buy what you really love and then continue to buy that and expand your palate to other stuff, but stick with what you really like because that's going to be the core ingredient. So
I agree.
With that, I think we can wrap this up and say we've covered gin. If there's a gin that you did not hear about that you really enjoy, let me know, dshomer@everydaydrinkers.com, and we could talk about it on the next show a little bit, or I could blog it or even look into it myself because I'm always looking for something new. This is Derek. For Doug, my cousin Doug, in the hizzy from North Carolina, even.
That's and where I roll.
You're rolling in the place where they invented the airplane. And our podcast producer, Luke Lydahl, you've just been buzzed by Everyday Drinkers. You can find us at everydaydrinkers.com. Check out our cocktail videos at everydaydrinkers.tv. Have a good one.
Peace.
Bam! We did it in like an 1:29:18.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was definitely tight.
Actually, I might have written my notes here. Let me check. Beep, 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 beep. Yeah, I did. I put it in my notes. So the
hold on.
What?
That you put it in your notes?
Yeah, it was way down
good
at the
job.
Bottom. Yeah, that's pretty pretty badass. Bing, 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 bing. There, I've come now. Okay, so hold on a second.
Hold on. I'll tell you in a second.
You gotta go to the Google?
Fuck yeah. 1 ounce, 2 mL.
The Google! These oogny... What are you doing?
Sorry. My ear was itching and I had to move my
headphones. Sounds like you're like raping your headphones.
I was raping my eardrum. It was protesting. It's like get your finger away from me. You sick fuck. You're doing it to yourself.
That's like self-rape. That's like masturbation. You
but you're telling yourself no the entire time.
If you tell yourself no, is it really against your will?
I need to file a police report.
I raped myself. Oh my god, dude.
I kept telling myself no.
Come on. You don't have to be drunk to appreciate that joke.
I wouldn't stop.
I kept telling myself no.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Hopefully we didn't offend too many people on that one.
No, it's like a self thing. I don't think you can.
Presently.
Drink sober, or wait.